Well, the president went on to stress energy issues, the increase in efficiency, the growth of renewables, and the fact that emissions have fallen. Any comment?
What's really powerful about what the president is saying in terms of climate change, really going back to his acceptance speech on election night, all the way through the inauguration, through to the State of the Union, is he starts by talking about the powerful consensus that climate change is underway and that it's an urgent problem we have to tackle.
Let's hear a bit of that tape.
One of the things that surprises me, or maybe not surprises me, but I think is an interesting point to emphasize, is that the rhetoric that the president is using has really shifted away from a focus on green jobs and onto the problem of climate change. And that's a problem that I think he did not speak about much in his first term and has really made a centerpiece so far, from his acceptance speech to his inaugural address to the State of the Union.
To think just a few years ago to say that one storm is linked to climate was, well, kind of verboten.
He made a point of saying that one event doesn't make a trend, but he very firmly started talking about climate-influenced weather events and sea level rise and forest fires and heat-related drought. What he's doing in talking about the impacts is connecting to the millions of Americans who now are experiencing climate impacts and the costly destruction of climate impacts. You know, if you're a gardener or a hiker or a carpenter who works outdoors, you already are observing and connecting the dots between climate-influenced weather events and climate change. And so the president is simply tapping into that and sensing it and reminding many other Americans that this thing is real.
So the president says that this is happening. He says that people see that this is happening. Realistically, is there any chance of Congress getting together and saying that this is happening and that action should happen now based on the science?
I thought it was a brilliant stroke that the president called on Congress and cited Senator John McCain and Senator Joe Lieberman's earlier work in trying to move a comprehensive climate bill through the Congress, because it is the Congress's responsibility to respond to an urgent problem like this. He then said, if Congress won't act, I will, and I will deploy administrative executive authority across the federal government to drive down carbon emissions. But his instinct, I think, is right. The Congress needs to step up to this and get back to the responsibility of legislating.
So, Professor Carlson, you're a lawyer that looks closely at environmental law. So tell us, what can the president do on his own if the Congress doesn't act?
Well, the president has already done a fair amount, and I think he will continue to act under authority that he's already got going forward. The most expansive power he has is under the Clean Air Act, and he's used that in two respects. One, to ratchet up fuel efficiency standards to really quite dramatic levels going forward. And the second thing he's doing is he's issuing regulations that are actually required under a court decision called Massachusetts versus EPA to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from new and existing coal-fired power plants and other utilities. And we can actually go a long way with those changes alone. He's also got power to, for example, use his procurement power to have his agencies purchasing green vehicles, to get the Defense Department, as it already has, focused on the development of renewable power. He's done a fair amount on federal lands in getting the siting of renewable facilities to produce renewable energy through more quickly. The Department of Energy can fund all sorts of innovative research into new technology. There's money set aside to do things like upgrade the transmission grid, to fund energy efficiency programs and so forth. So he's not only already done a lot, but continues to have a fair amount of power.
I noted that in his speech, he certainly suggested he would continue to push renewable energy to keep up with China, among other things. Is there enough energy in the renewable energy program that the president has laid out so far, Kevin Nablah?
Yes, I think the president has he has called in the last two states of the union before this most recent one for an 80% clean energy standard by 2030, and that kind of ambitious goal creates a lot of headroom for a lot of growth in renewables. Here's the interesting thing about what's happening with renewable energy in this country. Is that it not only is it growing rapidly, but it's driving manufacturing growth, American manufacturing growth. So in 2005, the percentage of wind towers, turbines, gearboxes installed in this country, made in this country, was 35%. Today it's 70%. So through this deep recession, this is one of the few growing areas of American manufacturing. And that has everything to do with state policies and federal policies and investments to drive renewable energy.
So one place where Congress really has cooperated with the president, although on a short-term basis, is in passing and extending the production tax credit, which really is one of the reasons why renewable energy has continued to grow throughout the recession. So it's one of the things that the president, I think, is trying to do in his State of the Union and speaking directly to Congress is to suggest that there may be areas where Congress can agree with the president on ways to stimulate new energy innovation, potentially to stimulate research and development, without actually tackling the larger question of an overall national climate policy.
Now, elsewhere in the speech, he said he plans to cut red tape and speed up oil and gas permits. So do you see that as an olive branch, maybe to the fossil fuel industry or heartland Democrats, to get some of this cooperation to continue?
I think Obama's energy policy all along has been to focus heavily on domestic energy sources, not always renewable ones, and I think some of that is political. I think some of it is economic reality. There's a huge boom in the drilling of natural gas, and I think it's something that no president can ignore. Natural gas prices have fallen really dramatically, and trying to encourage that has a couple of consequences, one of which is positive in the short run for climate change, and that is that natural gas is displacing coal, which is a much more carbon-intensive gas than natural gas is. And so in the short term, that's really led to a reduction in emissions, and that's not a bad thing to encourage. In the long run, if we're really to accomplish the kinds of climate goals that scientists believe are necessary to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we're going to have to move away from natural gas as well, or figure out how to do something with the emissions that natural gas and coal generate by sequestering them into the ground or something that doesn't release them into the atmosphere.
I agree with Ann that natural gas is playing a key role in helping us get off coal. Burning of coal has tremendous environmental impact and is driving a lot of our warming in our atmosphere. And we need to transition off of coal. That's job one. And so to have an abundance of domestic natural gas and have the price be so low is, my sense, is generally a positive thing. The president, in his speech, did speak to the need to develop technologies to burn natural gas even more efficiently than we're able to today, and to address the land and water environmental impacts, which is significant, particularly around fracking of natural gas. That's job two, is to ensure that when we do burn natural gas to produce electricity, it has the lowest possible impact. Now, the low price of natural gas also is creating some competition and stress for cleaner renewable energy, and we have to be mindful about that, because the best energy is that that produces no heat-trapping emissions.
Professor Carlson?
So one other reason that I think Obama has been focused on domestic drilling of oil and gas is because one argument in favor of moving toward cleaner energy sources is for national security reasons. And so to the degree that we have domestic sources, it allows the president to, as he did in a State of the Union, trumpet the fact that we're importing less oil than we used to. So I think it's all part and parcel of a greater strategy that focuses not just on the environmental benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but also thinking about the national security implications.
The president's plans, though, to speed up oil and gas permits, does it raise any red flags, Kevin Nablah? Does it say anything about the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline, for example?
The Keystone XL pipeline, which would transport dirty oil from the so-called tar sands sites up in Canada through the vertical length of this country down to our exports export ports in Texas really has become an emblem among people worried about climate change, in great part because we don't have a comprehensive policy in this country, a declining cap on carbon and other heat-trapping emissions within which to consider these projects. So what's happening now, whether it's this pipeline, proposed pipeline, or efforts to open up coal export ports in state of Washington, is that people across this country who are worried about climate change, the pace of change, and the role of fossil fuels in driving and accelerating it, stepping up and opposing these projects. Our sense is that we need to get a comprehensive policy in place that rapidly drives down greenhouse gas emissions and gives us a fighting chance to hold off catastrophic changes. Until then, there's likely to be a pitched battle over every major pipeline or a coal export or a similar kind of project that becomes a symbol of us turning a blind eye to what the burning of fossil fuels is doing to the ability of this planet to sustain life.
So I think the Keystone XL question raises a really important question that is mostly avoided in the State of the Union, but I think we're really going to need to focus on as well, and that is that the United States can't go it alone on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And as we do things like focus on domestic natural gas, the rest of the world is still heavily dependent upon coal. And in fact, things like ports that Kevin mentioned to export coal simply mean that we could shift a lot of the emissions away from the domestic economy and to the global economy. And one of the problems of that is that overall our greenhouse gas emissions aren't reduced. So one of the really interesting and important questions will be the degree to which Secretary of State Kerry, for example, makes the goal of reducing international global emissions central to his mission diplomatically.
What about Keystone particularly on this point, Professor Carlson? Some argue that if the Obama administration approves the pipeline for this tar oil, let me say that right. Some argue that if the Obama administration goes ahead and approves Keystone, that it is hypocritical, that its talk about addressing greenhouse gases doesn't make sense if such a large source of carbon for the atmosphere is allowed to come to market. Fair argument?
In my own view, I think it is a fair argument. I think if you're looking overall at whether the approval of Keystone is going to dramatically alter the global story about emissions, it probably doesn't do so, in part because Canada is likely to extract that oil anyway, and those greenhouse gas emissions are likely to accumulate in the atmosphere in any event. But I think symbolically, it is sending an absolutely mixed message about the United States' commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions overall.
Kevin Nubla?
The decision of the Obama administration on the Keystone Pipeline will be an early test. It will be challenging to square an approval of this pipeline through the length of the country to bring this carbon-intense resource out to the market with what the president is saying and calling for in terms of strong, bold action to address the threat of climate change.
So the president proposed to use federal oil and gas revenues to fund what he calls an energy security trust, and he said that this would drive research and shift our cars and trucks off of oil for good.
Well, I think it's an intriguing idea. I think one of the things that might be a place where you can get bipartisan agreement is to fund research into technology and innovation. That seems to be less controversial than, for example, regulating carbon emissions or putting a price on carbon by imposing either a tax or a cap and trade scheme. So I think that this is a place where maybe he can get some bipartisan agreement. I don't know whether he'll get it out of those particular revenues. I would also add that I think the push to move our automobile fleet away from conventional gasoline and to electricity and to other fuels that do not emit carbon is an absolutely necessary move if we're to reduce our carbon emissions in the way that scientists think we need to over the course of the next 30 or 40 years. It's a long-term strategy, but it's a strategy we've got to begin now.
It's a powerful vision. It's really the kind of presidential leadership that that you look to a president for, to set an ambitious long-term vision that helps solve a range of problems. The trust fund is an intriguing idea. It would create revenues for research on hydrogen fuel cell and battery electric vehicles, along with low-carbon biofuels and so on. It's a little bit of a mixed signal to draw the revenues from oil and gas drilling on public lands, that is to say, from fossil fuels. But there may actually be an exquisite partnership there.
The president, to do all this, needs a team. Most of his green team has left. The Secretary of Energy is moving on, Secretary of the Interior, the Administrator of the EPA, the leader of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. All these folks have left the administration, and only a couple of hires have been made so far. Why do you think such a turnover in the green team for the president if he's making such a new commitment here? Kevin Knoblauch?
The president set his own high bar in the first administration. He really brought in world-class scientists and engineers into these key cabinet roles. Lisa Jackson, who was so effective as EPA administrator, was trained as a chemical engineer. Stephen Chu, Nobel Prize-winning physicist, and so on. John Holdren, the science advisor. So the bar has been set quite high. And our hope, certainly, at the Union of Concerned Scientists, is that he will build on that terrific record and bring in successors who have scientific and technical understanding, as well as grounding in public policy.
Professor Carlson, what do you make of this tremendous turnover of the Green Team?
The turnover, to me, seems to be just the natural result of having served for 4 years, a very intensive 4 years, and not in any way a statement about whether the people who are leaving have a commitment to the president's agenda going forward. And I trust that he will find equally impressive replacements for all of those very talented and, as Kevin said, extremely qualified public servants. So it doesn't concern me that there's turnover. It just seems like the natural turnover at the end of a first term.
One quick last comment on a new administration member, John Kerry, Secretary of State. The XL pipeline decision first goes through the Department of State. As a senator, John Kerry sponsored really strong legislation, didn't pass on climate. How do you think having Mr. Kerry at State is going to affect something like the pipeline decision? Kevin Knoblauch?
There's been no stronger leader on climate action in the Congress than Senator Kerry. And I think we should have every reason to expect he'll bring that leadership into his role as Secretary of State. It will be a challenging early decision for him in his new role. The most important thing is that the environmental impact assessment that State Department is conducting on the Keystone Pipeline take into account climate change and climate impacts. Any serious environmental assessment of climate impacts of this pipeline will show that it would have a very significant harm and contributions to increasing warming.
I think what I would add to what Kevin said is that the Secretary of State is going to play a key role in upcoming negotiations to try to extend the Kyoto Protocol and to get the international community really committed to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And I think the signal it sends to have somebody who is such a strong senator on climate, now leading the State Department, is really, really important. And he's got an opportunity here to signal to the rest of the world that the United States is serious about reducing its own emissions and to getting the global community to follow suit.
Kevin Knobloch is president of the Union of Concerned Scientists, and Ann Carlson is a professor of environmental law at UCLA. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
And now for the joke question. President Obama is seen as America's first black president. Does he have a chance to be America's first green president?
Absolutely.
I thought Bill Clinton was America's first black president.